The AutJet Business Show is your gateway to expert business advice and real-world success stories. Each week, a different leader in the business world will share their tips, insights, and lessons, offering you practical advice to navigate your entrepreneurial journey. Whether you have a business idea or are just starting out or looking to elevate your existing business, the AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Ensure you get these transformative conversations live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. or find the podcast at highfm.com. Let's build your business empire together.
The AutJet Business Show is brought to you with the compliments of F-Stage. Let them bring your corporate event to life and make it unforgettable.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact AvStage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
Welcome to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel. And tonight we have a special guest with us. It's the CEO of HiFM himself, Howard Feldman. Good evening, Howard.
Good evening. Awesome to be here. Thank you for asking me.
That's great. You know, it feels like I'm coming into your house. And it reminds me of a story. My dad said to me, oh, I bumped into your brother. And I said, where? And he said, in his house. And that's what I feel like tonight. So
you bumped into me in my house.
In your own house.
Right, in my studio.
So I'm going to introduce Howard to anyone who doesn't know. And tonight is about getting to know Howard a lot more, because he's going to be running the station going forward. And we want to know who Howard is. But as always, before I get there, I'm going to start with a little bit of a business story. And this little bit of a business story is about a shopping trolley. Do you know that the shopping trolley was invented in 1937 by a grocer? It was a store owner in Oklahoma, Mr. Selvin Goodman. And the problem was that shoppers would stop buying the moment their handheld baskets became too heavy. And he realized that was costing him a lot of money. So he went out and he developed the trolley. And then when he showed it to everybody, no one used it. It was a complete disaster. Men refused to use the trolleys because they felt it made them look weak. And women refused to use it because the trolleys reminded them of baby strollers. So here's how Goldman got people to use it. He placed an ad in the Oklahoma City Times claiming his no basket carrying plan had been met with instant approval. So that was the first bit of fake news in those days even. And even though this was a lie, Mr. Goldman understood something that most entrepreneurs miss. People don't adopt new behaviors because the product is better. They adopt them because they see other people doing it first. So what did Mr. Goldman do besides the advert? He hired good-looking models of all ages, both men and women, and paid them to walk through the stores using the carts. He also put a greeter at the front door to offer every customer a trolley when they walked in. And if customers refused, they would just point out to them, look at all those other people using it, because people do what other people do. And within weeks, Goldman's shopping trolley went from being virtually unused to being used across all of his stores. And by 1940, only 3 years later, there was a 7-year waiting list for his trolleys from other grocery stores. Goldman founded the Folding Carrier Company, which became the nation's largest shopping trolley manufacturer. This invention made him a millionaire. Today, there are over 20 million shopping trolleys rolling through stores in America at any given moment. That is one trolley for every 13 Americans. And the trolley icon even appears on websites when you want to buy things online. So what are the business lessons? There are quite a few, but I'm going to mention just three. First of all, just having a great idea is not good enough. You have to sell the idea even when the product itself is brilliant. The second lesson, what you think your main business is might just be a stepping stone to your real business success. And number three, whatever your product is, get customers and then others will follow. That's the business lesson for tonight, and we're going to go into the interview with Howard after the ad break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact AvStage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
Welcome back. I'm David Zeidel. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show, and we're about to talk to Howard Feldman, the new CEO of HiFM. Howard Feldman is a South African author, a columnist, and a radio host known for his sharp insight, humor, and ability to unpack complex issues in a way that's both engaging and accessible. He's a respected voice in media. He hosts the popular Morning Mayhem, or in Hebrew, Balagan Babokir, on HiFM. He writes widely on current affairs and is the author of three books. With a strong background in marketing and communication, including 6 years leading marketing at Synthesis Software Technologies, Howard now works with organizations and leaders to refine their messaging, build authentic personal brands, and navigate complex media landscapes. And as I said, last but definitely not least, he's the new CEO of HiFM. He joins us today to share his life journey and maybe some insights into the future of HiFM. Howard, welcome to the AutJet Business Show.
Thank you.
And tonight, as I mentioned to you when you walked in, and I welcomed you to your own home, It's about the listeners getting to know a little bit about more about you. So if you can just start in the beginning, Where did you go to school? What did you study? What was the beginning of the Howard Feldman we know today?
So I grew up in Johannesburg three siblings, four of us. Grew up in Johannesburg, always observant, religious, which is quite unusual back then, but wasn't really so trendy. Went to Yeshiva College, then went on to Wits, where I studied. My undergrad was a BA in English, comparative literature, literary theory and law. Went on to do my LLB. I became very involved with the Law Student Council because we were, at that stage, we were actually the first non-racial Law Student Council. So it was an incredible opportunity. You know, we were debating the Constitution, writing of this Constitution that later became became law. So that was an incredible opportunity. Then I went on to work with a mining company on the legal side. Loved the trading aspect of mining, of commodities, formed a commodity trading company, which I ran for around about 15 years or so, and then decided it was time for a complete pivot. So I'm not sure where you want me to go up to, but that's what took me to a certain point in my life.
So seeing that this is a business show as well, I want to look at, and I often hear people say, oh, I formed my own company, and then as if that is so easy. What is the process of forming your own company, and what gave you the confidence that you could do that?
So I think that I never I never suffered from imposter syndrome. I always thought that, well, you know, if it, that I could do this. So I always had, you know, I'm fortunate that I have an internal confidence and belief, because I do think that we make things happen. And obviously, we rely on God and faith and family and a wife who's supportive and all of these things around us, and many people who are supportive. But if you believe in something, I just can't see how it's possible not to achieve it. We'll make it happen. And it's with the right energy and the right focus and the right people around you. And I've always believed very, very strongly in that. I've never done anything on my own. Ever. I mean, I don't know which business person has. Like, you need to work with a team of people who understand how you think, who are good at the things that you're terrible at, and there's a lot I'm terrible at. But that's how these things work. So yeah, it was obviously hard, but somehow it seems to me that looking at my own personality, I love building things. So that is what drives me the most. I get, I can become a little restless if I'm not being challenged.
So all the business books you read out there talk about getting the right team together, and this whole concept that people say get the right people on the bus and the wrong people off the bus. How do you know who the right people are? Or do you have a specific process that you're even aware of?
No process whatsoever. It's that I'm not very, I'm very clear on what I need around me. So I do rely on people to be fairly intuitive, pick up on what I'm handing them, even if I'm not saying by 5 o'clock do that. But it's about personality, actually, more than anything. It's about people that are being real and people that will hold me to account and understand how I work. So open but respectful. That's really the environment that I love to be part of, and we do. And you've got to have fun. You've got to enjoy what we do. And I know everybody says that, but you actually have to mean it. You can't just say it. There's a very, very, and I'm a marketer. There's a huge difference between marketing externally and marketing from internally. There's nothing more powerful than a company, a group, an organization that is authentically marketing itself. That bubbles to the surface. It's, you know, these external marketing doesn't stand a chance next to a strong internal culture that just bubbles to the surface.
So you said you had a legal background, and then you went into commodity trading.
Well, it was more on the negotiation contract side originally, in terms of the mining company and doing the sales and that type of thing. But I liked the trade because I like people. Mm. I won't say that I'm the best negotiator in the world, but I do. In fact, I'm probably not at all. But I like people and I like relationships, and I like to work in a way that everybody can achieve something. So that's what I enjoyed, and commodities allowed me to meet people from all around the world, because it's a global industry. And I love that. I love being at home in various cities around the world.
And then you've just said, like, but I'm a marketer. Now, what you've expressed so far I don't hear marketing from that. So I want to find out, what is that marketing side of it? But just before we get there, Craig showed me a sign saying we need to go to a break. So we'll talk do it
about
after
that.
The break.
Sure.
The AltJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. contact Avstage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
Welcome back. I'm David Zeidel. You're listening to the Orchard Business Show. And we're talking to Howard Feldman, who I thought was the CEO of High FM, but he tells me he went to law, commodity broking.
And I'm then, ADD. What can I do?
And then in the middle tells me, as a marketer, so where did this marketing aspect come from?
So I've always loved that aspect of business, and commodity trading is that, because what are you doing? It was physical commodity trading. So we were taking chrome, manganese, iron ore, and from South Africa, we were selling it to various parts of the world, to Europe, to the East, to, you know, specifically China, India, and other parts of the world. So that's all marketing, really. It wasn't about, I mean, nobody loves chrome. Nobody loves manganese, but it all really is about that. So what is marketing? Marketing is projecting the external of your company so that somebody knows if they're buying from you that they're going to get the product that they ordered, they're going to get it on time, that you're reliable. If there's a problem with the quality, that of all people, you know, your company is one that will make good on it. So really, it is a lot of it is about that and communicating those values as best you can. I always, as I said, when I studied literary theory, English, and law, but I could very easily have continued in the language with English because I loved writing, and that's I think why ultimately I came back to it. I like communicating, broadcasting, that's why that all appeals to me. And that's why now, as the CEO of Chai, all of these worlds intersect. And that is quite, you know, tremendously exciting for me.
So besides just the marketing, so you had a marketing agency or you have a marketing agency at the moment?
But we do, you know, we do marketing consulting for various companies. And it's, from my perspective, my involvement is much more obviously strategic because Chai is obviously taking up a tremendous amount of my time, especially at the moment. Making sure that we readjust and put it on the right footing to build a sustainable environment. But I love the marketing challenges. I like crisis management. I like dealing with, I'm drawn to dealing with situations where people do find themselves, if a financial institution is in a difficult position in terms of maybe some of the publicity and things, you know, something that's really my forte, is finding the ways to create a, and it's not necessarily a narrative, but really to put the right narrative forward that reflects the values that you're trying to communicate. And I think that we are and many companies, you know, even ones that you would assume communicate very well, don't. They get very caught up in all sorts of things, and you can look at communication and you can see it's been written by a committee. So maybe you've written it but then sent it to somebody else for comment and they've added a paragraph and then somebody else has. It's like a shul letter, you know, that everybody's thing has to be included in it. And by the time it gets to the recipient, nobody can read it because it's rubbish and it's boring. So how do we communicate clearly, powerfully, and get those messages across?
So as you're speaking to me, it sounds like your working life has almost been like a jigsaw puzzle.
It's interesting.
And all these little pieces you're putting together are forming a picture.
Yes.
And they sometimes don't seem like they're related, but they're all related. They've all got that little piece that fits together. Is this something that you think you knew in the beginning?
Absolutely not.
But even if you don't think you knew, do you think like you had an inkling of where you were going, or are you building the the jigsaw puzzle as you're going along?
So I think I built it as I was going along. So without, I just concentrated on the things that I loved to do. When I decided it was enough with the whole commodity trading business, because it was an enormously pressurized environment, I was traveling a fortune, chasing things that I'm not even sure that I really wanted, but you get very caught up in that world. And there were two incidents in very quick succession, both of them robberies, armed robberies, guns at my head. And it just, obviously I was ready to make that change, but at that point I decided it was enough. And I had no idea what I was going to do. I took the time then to start writing. And I hadn't written for like 20 years, even though I'm absolutely passionate about it. And that, I think, unleashed a whole nother area that was one of those puzzle pieces. And I remember thinking that, what's my job in this world? What am I meant to be doing? And I'm pretty sure it wasn't to be a commodity trader. It was almost like at some point, I actually remember being in Israel soon after these events and standing at the Kotel and thinking in prayer thinking, you know, give me some guidance here. Like, what's actually expected of me? And I had no idea that I was being given the answer, but actually I have been given the answer, because I think many, in a way you say all the pieces fit together, and it does for the CEO position of Chai, but it also landed 2 years ago because I was ready to deal with what we were dealing with as a community after October 7th. I had been, in inverted commas, in training for that without having realized it. So I was at the right place then. I was at the right place when COVID hit to be able to help people through that and communicate and bring information. So whether I'm an idiot who steps up to the front lines because I can, or I feel that that's my job at the time, I'm not really sure. But I do feel we have a job, and I would hate to go through this world not having done what I needed to do.
So, I mean, that's quite amazing, because I've only thought of it now when you talk about those COVID times. Mm. It was your voice with Dr. Myberg that kind of took us through this complete unknown. We were in almost like a panic state. And then just a couple of years later, October the 7th hits. And it's the same, and it's the same voice. It's the only thing as a Jewish community that we can turn to and hear the other side, because everything else is being dictated from elsewhere.
Right.
And then you spoke about that, your writing was that the first book, or was it writing in newspapers or magazines?
So I've always enjoyed writing, but I wasn't doing it very, very often. I got involved in the Jewish Report a couple of years before that, because they needed it was needed. And I did so because I love writing, but didn't land up writing because I was there for other reasons. When I started writing my book, that's also when I started writing for publications. That's when I started my journey with News 24, Times of Israel, Jerusalem Post, all of these publications. And I just loved it. It really is. That's writing feeds me. Writing feeds my soul.
So I want to again ask you the same question. You make it sound so simple. I started writing for Times of Israel and News 24, and as if when you start writing it, they just give it to you. It's similar to that story I started off with the trolley. You can have a great trolley, but if people aren't buying it, it's not helping. How do you write something and then get somebody to pay you for it?
Well, okay, so I've never been good at being paid for my writing. So that's that is my first problem. But but being published in these places is also not it isn't simple. But I believe that I have something worth saying, and I won't write something that I don't. I hate noise. So I won't write just to add to the noise. If everybody's writing the same opinion, then, and I'm going to then just write that, one of my bugbears is, and especially Rabbonim, not to be disparaging, but when they'll stand up, one rabbi spoken, and then the next one stands up and says, I want to echo the words. No, don't echo. Echoes, we don't need echoes. We've heard it the first time. But, you know, so I hate that. So I'll only write if I feel I have something to offer. Maybe I just feel I do, and sometimes I do, and sometimes I get a great response, and sometimes I get a terrible response. Worse than that is I get no response, because that obviously means it didn't impact anybody. But it's I write in my own voice. I spent a lot of time after the commodity business understanding who I am, what drives me, what my vulnerabilities are, and I'm very, very comfortable with them. And I'm comfortable to speak about them. When you and I were chatting before, you said to me, is there anything that I should avoid? And I can't even think of anything, because this is, you know, we're all so horribly and wonderfully imperfect. I don't know why we have to pretend otherwise.
Yeah. The only thing I have to avoid is those pastries that your wife makes.
Me too. That is definitely one of those things.
So just on that. So you say you write when you want to, but you have a weekly article that comes out in the Jewish Report.
Yes.
So it's not just when you want to. You have to.
Yes.
In a way.
Yes. Yes.
And reading through those, they're a blend of your own life stories.
Right.
But they are also, they've got that touch of humor.
Yes.
Where does that humor come from?
My family. That's not even, I don't even need to think twice about that. My late father had a tremendous sense of humor. My mother had no sense of humor whatsoever, but was my great supporter in other ways. My siblings are funny, genuinely funny. We all deal, maybe we're a little macabre. We also come from a German background, and somehow
hang on, humor and German don't.
Well, that's mixed. What's so interesting, because yes, one shouldn't. Well, my mother was a German, and she didn't have a sense of humor,
okay. So
that makes sense. No, but there's almost a very, very macabre way of just dealing with things, and humor. And I also believe very strongly that what humor does is it removes our defenses. So if you and I are joking about something, but still talking about a very, very real and serious situation, we can do it so much easier with humor, but then we can still talk about it. If we are rigid and protective and serious, it's much harder to get to people. So when I write an article using humor, people relax through that article, and it can have, and I hope most of my articles, I believe, have a serious point that I am trying to get across, but I hopefully do it in a way that people can hear it, that it's easier to hold that mirror up sometimes a little bit closer with humor.
If you just joined us and you're wondering who we're talking to, it's Howard Feldman, the new CEO of Chai FM, and we're going to get to that aspect a little bit later, but we're just talking about kind of leading up to that and what's he involved in and what he's been involved in. So Howard, I want to ask you both with the article and then with the morning show that you do. So first of all, with the article, when do you start writing it, and do you sit down for an hour and write and finish it, or is it something that you keep coming back to during the week?
No, I could never do that. So until I was magnificently fired from News 24, I had two articles to write that I had to write. The others, you know, if I'm writing for Politics, Webs, or Times of Israel, that's whenever I want to do that. But for News 24, Jewish Report, I would have to write twice a week. Jewish Report, I submit on a Tuesday, and at that stage, News 24, I was submitting on a Thursday. I'm very, very fortunate to write quickly. It doesn't take me long once I have an idea about what I'm writing. In fact, an article will take me around about 20 minutes to write. So I'm very, very fortunate that I've got a very quick a quick way of writing. I write as I think, and then I just go back and edit and change things around and reread it. I read it up, you know, out loud, because it needs to sound, it needs to be in my voice. If it's not in my voice, then it's not authentic to me. But no, I never really go back to it. I've got one or two people that need to check my articles, because I can sometimes be a little bit edgy. My wife checks everything that I write because I can't really be trusted.
So can you have two versions, the wife-edited one and your other one?
Do you know how many people have asked me? You know, because people say to her, I can't believe you let him write that. And she says, you should see what I didn't let him publish. And I can tell you that is what people want to read, is what I wasn't allowed to publish. But I have fun when I write. I absolutely, it's what I, you know, people get a kick from anything, golf or whatever they do. For me, it's writing. It's sitting and writing and creating this tapestry out of words.
And then getting to the radio show. So I stood in for you one day only.
Right.
I don't know how you managed to do that. Just take us through your day getting up so early in the morning.
So I start my day at 4. By that stage, I've already got a sense of I know what my show is in terms of guests. So I am, my show is set up by my producer, who has arranged all of the interviews. So that part of it is done. But I'll still go through now and have to prepare for each interview, as you know. It takes a while because you really can't come across as an idiot, and it's really very insulting to the guest if you actually don't know what you're talking about. So my research is about my process is, starting at 4, I go through all of the news, whatever I can read. I just go through as much news as possible, and I make sure that I've got enough stories and discussion points there. And already that's forming in my mind, because I might come across an article thinking, you know what, that'll be a great conversation to have with listeners. So I put it in a certain area where I think, okay, that could be something to chat about, and then I prepare each of my interviews. I prepare, my style is to prepare an intro and the first question. I know where I'm going afterwards, but I don't want to be too locked in to a series of questions, because otherwise I think it doesn't flow like I would like it to. I have no idea if that's the best technique or not, but that's what I do. And then I'm in studio by about 5:30, finish at 9, and then get onto the other serious work of either marketing, but a lot of it at this stage is really, most of my whole day really is about Chai FM and the future here.
So I think you said you don't know if it works, and I think it does work for me, because it feels like you're talking to the person, and it's not a series of pre-made up questions.
Correct.
Where you're actually communicating with a person.
And you're hearing,
you're
not just waiting to read the next question.
Correct.
And I think that does make a difference.
And then sometimes when you're doing that, in the middle, you have like what's just happened now, where Craig says to you, we've got to go for a break.
Right.
So we'll pick it up after that.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact AvStage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
Welcome back. You're listening to David Zeidler. I'm on the AutJet Business Show, and we're talking to Howard Feldman, who's telling us now and going through the process of the morning show. So did I hear you correctly? You say you get up at 3 a.m.
4.
at 4 a.m.
4 a.m. Mm-hmm.
And the show only starts at 6.
Sure.
So you do the whole preparation beforehand, and then you go in and you do the show. You finish at 9, and then you do other work.
Right. Yeah, listen, it's not a short day, but it does keep me out of, I was going to say it keeps me out of trouble, but it doesn't. It actually gets me into trouble, but that's also fine. I'm not good when I'm not productive. I'm not happy when I'm not productive. In fact, I'm going on holiday next week, and I do very, very well for the first 10 days on holiday. But then I start to feel like a totally useless human being. Like, what am I doing? Like, wasting my life away on holiday. So I really do best when I'm very, very busy. And I like to be busy. I like to be productive. And I, as I said, I like to build. So right now, we're looking at all aspects. We're changing the formats of a lot of when the shows are, what it looks like in terms of shows. So it's an exciting time for me. So it doesn't feel like work. It just feels like creativity. Really.
But what time then do you, if you've got to get up at 4 in the morning, what time do you go to bed at night?
So I'm not good at that either. I try to, my rule is to go to sleep by 10, but I never do. I go to sleep normally around about 11, so it's not a lot of sleep. I do panic when I go out. I'm really not a lot of fun at night because I'll go to a wedding and think I actually can't, like this is too much for me. So I'm there, that's when I stress. Being at home and just relaxing, I do find it hard to work at night. Some people work well at night. Throughout varsity, school, no matter where I was working, night times are hard for me. I'm an early morning person, and that's why the morning show also works for me, because it just plays to my natural rhythms.
So if you look at the morning show, and I know you've been involved with a lot of people, both on X, when you're on X, hitting out on you, and obviously in your show things, can you think of any outstanding or moments that stand out for you, funny, not funny, things that touched you during the show and on X?
Yeah, It's such a difficult question. I mean, there's certain interviews that I've had that are memorable. But when I think about talking to some of the hostages over the last 2 years and feeling their pain was something that was incredibly overwhelming. And that was really hard. Why? Because I don't think it's fair on our listener if I am overtly emotional about something. I need to balance it. So if I'm talking to a hostage and it's very emotional, to some extent I need to bring that balance. Otherwise, it's a bit self-indulgent. So those were my hardest interviews, where we were just hearing these horror stories, and living through their pain with them. To me, that was incredibly traumatic. The other thing is, sometimes we have very difficult days. We all have very personal challenges, difficult times, and I've got a very, very strict process where I leave it at that studio door. It can't come in because there's no space for my own stuff in studio. So I have to bring my personality. I've got to bring myself in. But the parts of it that could negatively impact my listener have got to stay outside that door. And that has taught me quite a lot of skills in that regard, because I'm not saying I'm denying it, because when I walk out the door I can take it back, but I can't bring it into studio. So those are the challenges. I also sometimes we interview people, and in fact I was thinking early last week was I had Rob Herzog on, and he was going on as Rob does about, you know, the ANC government, this, and they're being funded by Iran, and that's fine because everybody's saying it, but actually, it's not proven. So my job is to push back and say, hold on, is there a smoking gun, or are these still allegations? And he says, well, if you want to be a wuss and make me say the word alleged, and then he used some choice language that we perhaps should not be using on radio. So these are these things. Or if I push back on somebody who our listeners agree with, somebody right-wing in Israel, many of our listeners are drawn to that. But I have to push back. That's my job. And then I'll get hell from them. Or if I have somebody left on and they'll say, why are you having this woke lefty on? What is wrong with you? So, but that's our job. Durko, we keep inviting on. They'll never come. They've told us that they won't come on our show. So it's quite a difficult thing to balance. Those are really the challenges. And also sometimes I'll say outrageous things and people are quite... get quite easily offended. I think that, and that's okay. I don't mind. I think anybody who listens to the show long enough knows I don't mean half of what I'm saying. I'm not saying it to provoke. I'm saying it because I think it's funny. And I just think we need to just relax. It's a different opinion or a different way of looking at something is not going to kill us. It's actually probably quite good for us. So I do have to fight a little bit, and that's taught me to be to have a bit of thick skin, because I literally will go to shul, and in fact somebody was saying to me they watched a woman marching up to me on Saturday, with a finger wagging, and to take me on about something that I had said. But that's just how it is, and it's a blessing, but it obviously can be challenging at times as well.
So I think it's an unbelievable skill to be able to leave it at the door and then walk out again and then put it on, but actually leave it when you're here. Do you ever go through a time when you might sit for a day or 2 days or longer where it sits with you in your gut and you think, I shouldn't have, I could have? Do you ever go through that process?
In terms of anything?
Yes, I do.
But I also limit it. So I will... if I'm upset about something, I will give myself time to be upset about it. But I'll know, after that, I need to pull myself together. And we have challenges. Life is not, it's not without its complications. And anybody who thinks otherwise is in for a horrible surprise. We deal with hard things. We deal with, you can't have kids and can't, have family around who you care about and not be impacted on, by life. There's a lot of heavy stuff around, and I feel an immense amount of responsibility for our community. I feel greatly the responsibility of being there for people. So all of that does, it can impact me, but I give myself a certain amount of defined time to deal with that before I rationalize it away or deal with it in a way that is good for me, for my family, for people around me, and for our listeners.
So this show is an hour long, and this is definitely one of those times where I think it should be 2 hours long. We've got another sign of having to go to the break, and we've spoken about your past, but when we come back from the break, I want to find out your vision for the future, especially with High FM.
Brilliant.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact AvStage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
Welcome back. I'm David Zeidel. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show, and we're talking to Howard Feldman. And we found out a little bit, about who Howard is. And now we want to look at who Howard and High FM is going to be. And Howard, one of the previous guests that we had on the show was Alon Reyes. Mm. And he brought up this concept of a letter from the future. Mm. And the letter from the future, he called it backcasting.
Right.
Is you 5 years, you're sitting in 5 years' time, you're in 2030 or 2031, looking back and you telling us the story of what happened in the last 5 years before it happens. What is your letter from the future related to Chai FM?
Oh, what a wonderful, wonderful question. Incidentally, I do this every year for the year. Is I sit down at the end of a holiday, as January starts, and write a letter to myself for the end of the year to say well done on having achieved, like having done the following. So it's an interesting concept, which I do like. If we take Chai 5 years forward, what I would hope to achieve is that we Chai. Although it's already a community station, I would love it to be an complete intersection of community, that everything flows in and out of through Chai FM. So not that it just sits apart and comments on community, but that actually Chai is an absolute reflection of our incredible community here. That said, that's only really the idea of what Chai is. How do we achieve that? Is to make Chai a platform that people can come to listen to live radio, but also to be able to pull up different podcasts, even though you can do that, but to create it, you know, right now, but to make it in such a way that we really just become this this digital place where community is recorded, is digitized, it is, you know, we have this wealth of knowledge. So you could be able to come into the environment and look for some of these business interviews and hear interesting people, maybe learn something. And I'll tell you what we're starting in terms of the Chai learning programs. But just to create something for every aspect of our community. One of my biggest concerns about October 7th in a Jewish world following October 7th is that we've been narrowed, that Jews have been narrowed to only become defenders of Israel, whereas actually we artists and we writers and we scientists. Okay, we're not very good sportsmen, but we can talk about sport. We're so many things. We family people, we rabbis, we are a rich and deep, and I don't mean it financially, deep people who contribute to society, to our country, to the world in such a fantastic way. But what October 7th has done is narrowed us. What I want to do is rip it right open again to create an environment that is Chai, that is live radio, but also a digital platform where we can access, where everybody can access this richness that is Jewish. And it isn't only for Jews. You know, and I know that from our morning show is more than half of my listeners aren't Jewish. Why are they there? They're there because we have real conversations, we talk about interesting things, we laugh, we have a good time together, we play terrible music and good music, and we all moan about it because we've all got opinions on it. That's community. You know, we don't all think the same, we all think differently. So what my five-year vision of this Chai FM weird and wonderful place is to be a mirror, reflection, and maybe archive as well of everything that is what our community is.
Wow, that's amazing. And it's a Jewish radio station, but as you said, I think the value in it is it shouldn't just be a Jewish radio station for Jewish people.
Correct.
I think the message, as you say, needs to go a lot broader.
And it does. And we've got an incredible amount of listeners overseas, even though many of our conversations are very South African. But that's okay. You know, we can't be everything to everybody. We have to be who we are. And that in of itself attracts people. Because we, you know, that is, that's what makes us, you know, this idea that we all have to be the same is so boring. It's just not a value in my view. So yes, it's the appeal is to all South Africans, to people around the world, and who knows, then maybe it does ultimately become something that is way more global, not just, not purely a South African community station.
And then to wind up at the end, seeing that this is a business show and running a station and even running a show, if that's all you were doing, is a business. If you were talking to yourself from 25, 30 years ago, or to somebody who's sitting there thinking, how do I find my purpose? What should I do with my life? do you have two or three things that you'll say, do this or examine this?
You know, towards the beginning of this conversation, I spoke about internal marketing and external marketing. I think we need to treat ourselves in the same way. If we're going to, and I spend a lot of my time marketing something externally that I wasn't internally, and that is not a recipe for a long and for a happy life. Make sure that what you are out there is who you really are. Don't be so afraid of who you are, because you'll be amazed at how okay and how successful you can be by just knowing who you are, being comfortable with who you are, and trusting people with that authenticity. And that is, I would say, my biggest lesson has been that. It has been to let the internal and the external match. And that I feel if people can achieve that and be comfortable with who they are, then there's nothing to stop them.
So I'm going to go back to a quote that you said. You said you don't have the imposter syndrome.
Mm.
And I think for me, out of this whole interview, that's kind of one of the biggest lessons, is be authentic. And it's become a way of, oh, the imposter syndrome. And I think I agree with you. We must get rid of that and go away from that. And Howard, I want to thank you so much for just sharing who you are. It's been a privilege to be able to talk to you for an hour, get a little bit of insight. Maybe we can do it on an annual basis.
Oh, I'd love it.
And get where Chai is, where it's going, where Howard is, where it's going.
Fantastic. Thank you for an amazing interview.
So I'm David Zeidel. This has been the Autjet Business Show. And this has been Howard Feldman, the brand new CEO of Chai FM. The Autjet Business Show is brought to you with the compliments of F-Stage. Let them bring your corporate events to life and make it unforgettable.